back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, this is the weekend. A lot of teams have been pointing to, a lot of fans have been looking forward to all season long, championship weekend. So, Dixie, let's get it. We're here, man. We made it. Made it to the final weekend of the NCAA Division I men's lacrosse season. It all culminates this weekend in East Hartford, or just Hartford, Connecticut?
East Hartford. It's East Hartford. Rensselaer Field.
Rensselaer Field.
Yep.
And you'll be there. You're calling the game. Aren't you working this weekend? You're calling the games on radio?
Doing the Westwood One gig again on national radio with Dave Ryan. And then Dave and I will also call Division II and Division III championship games for, I believe it's NCAA.com. But we've been doing that the last couple of years, so we'll continue that. And then we have the national championship game Monday, 1 o'clock on Westwood One Radio. So a very busy weekend.
Forgive me, the Division III still has to play their semifinals, correct?
No, it's RIT and Union are facing off for the championship.
Wow, upstate, rocks the house.
Right.
And the Division II game, who's in that, Dix?
Tampa versus Mercy. So I believe two first-timers squaring off for that Division II championship.
Mercy's 16-1 on the season. Only loss was to Lemoyne by a goal back in early March, March 5th. What a season for the Mustangs.
Big win, big doings. They beat Lemoyne in double overtime last weekend to avenge that regular season loss and advance to the Division II national championship game against Tampa.
Those games are always fun. They're always exciting. I love when you get, for those games, Division II and III in particular, like you just get their fan bases there on that Sunday, and it's for people from all over. I mean, it's as good. Championship weekend Saturday is so much fun.
It is.
I'm still debating whether I'm going to go or not. I'm not sure. It seems like
what's holding you back?
It's in Hartford, Connecticut,
right?
And I have responsibilities. I have responsibilities like up until like Friday. I can't leave work. It's just a. Do I drive up on Saturday morning?
It's just too much. It's too much. I'm too important.
I might go by myself. My wife said she'll only go if I can get suite tickets. If I can get four suite tickets, my family can go. So if anyone's hearing this and you got some suite tickets, reach out to me. Hit me, man.
Why do you have to bring her?
Well, she said that's the only way she'll go is if she sits in a suite.
The only way she'll go. That's not the only way you'll go.
She'll go. No, I'll sit out in the stands with my sister and my brother-in-law or his family or whatever.
That's what I'm saying.
I'll just go by yourself. I could. It's something about being away from my kids for like a weekend.
Take the kids.
I offered to do that. I said, I will take both the kids and we'll go and have a good time. And she said, well, you can't go without
me. You can't go without me, but I'm not going to be anywhere other than a suite.
Amy's worked in the sports business for a long time.
Right.
She's been spoiled. And she's like, I'm only going if I can get a suite.
Now, listen, I called the games there last year, but I didn't notice if there were suites. I don't even know if there are suites there. This is the University of Connecticut. This isn't,
They have to have some type of nice air conditioned places.
I think the weather's supposed to be fairly mild, I think it's low to mid 70s. So it's not going to be scorching hot from what I can see. I haven't checked the weather in a couple of days.
Was it hot last weekend, though? My goodness.
It was unbearable last week. That was bad.
Yeah, it was rough. Before we get into all the quarterfinal action and then talk about the two games on Saturday, let's just do some news and notes from around. So Hopkins hired an offensive coordinator, John.
News of the week.
Crawley away from Lehigh. And you had predicted this. You told Sweezy and I and you, we were all talking on Sunday during the games. I think it's going to be Crawley. You predicted this. Good hire. What do you think?
I do think it's a good hire. I think it's a smart hire. Smart in that you get an alum to come in, a young alum at that, who has had some success at the Division I level coaching Lehigh for the last couple of seasons. Prior to that, Notre Dame and Marquette. Was that the other stop? Forgive me if I got that wrong, but you know, he's been at Lehigh a couple of years now. He's done nice work there. Good guy. I know he works really, really hard. Saw him all summer out at all the tournaments, showcases, events, games, whatever. Usually when you found John Crawley, you found Bobby Benson because Crawley played for Bobby at Johns Hopkins. So I think it's a smart hire, and I do think it's a good hire. And yeah, I don't know. I saw a funny post. It said something like "Make alumni great again" at Hopkins or something. So I think people are applauding the fact that an alum is being brought back to Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, I mean, I've been harping on this for years. It's like, this is not enough talent. They're not recruiting well enough over the last 8 years, really. And they need a strong recruiter. I think his ties to pro league, and he's young. I think it is a good hire too. And I'm excited to see what he can do in at Homewood Field. Two schools who have not made hires and still have jobs open are St. John's and Providence. Both of those let their longtime coaches go early in May after the regular season ended, and are still looking for hires. And that'll be something to keep an eye on as Memorial Day weekend. I mean, they could name it. It's a good opportunity to do something like that, or maybe they're just waiting for some teams to get done playing to bring a coach in. Who knows?
But speaking of Bobby Benson, I could see him being a fit at Providence. I think that's, and you know, his wife is a graduate of Providence. So when you talk about the family thing, I don't think that would be a tough sell if he had to relocate up north. Mm-hmm. So, and also I think that's a program that you know, they have potential for sure. And I think what Benson's doing this year with Maryland, coupled with the family connection, that could be a real good fit.
Keep an eye on that for sure. One other news is the Atlantic 10 Conference, the A-10, became an official lacrosse conference. We already had members in St. Bonaventure, St. Joe's, Richmond, and UMass, our A-10 schools in basketball and a ton of other sports. And they pulled in High Point from SoCon and Hobart from the NEC. That'll be their 16 league. That's a nice little league for the future, but it leaves some holes other places. Your thoughts?
I haven't been able to dive into this or get my arms around it. So, once championship weekend is over and the dust has settled and my focus is elsewhere, I will, be able to look at it a little bit more. But you have to, you wonder what happens to the SoCon as a lacrosse conference. I think that's probably done, right? And, the Atlantic 10 formation, you're taking teams from the CAA, you're taking teams from Northeast. What are those conferences going to look like moving forward?
All right, Dick, so let's talk about last weekend. What were your overall thoughts on the games? Again, we're texting on Sunday, and I sort of rearranged my day. Amy and I went to Wine in the Woods at Merriweather Post. First time I've ever been there. It was fun, but it was really hot.
Thanks for the invite. Another Flynn family adventure that the Dixons do not get the invitation to.
Oh, I knew you'd want to watch the games. So, this is this festival that happens over the course of the weekend. It's always the same weekend. I've never been able to go before. Went this time. And it was 93 degrees on Sunday. So it starts at like 11 a.m. Went there, missed the first game, but came home to watch the Maryland-Virginia game. Planned my whole day around that game. And it was terrible. It just wasn't a good game. Is this what we can expect this weekend with this Terps team, or maybe we'll have some drama, I hope. I don't know.
I think that's the way it's trending. Rutgers-Penn was a terrific game. Congratulations to Brian Breck and the Scarlet Knights advancing to their first ever national semifinals. Really impressed with Colin Kirst. Really impressed with the offensive efficiency. Ross Scott, Shane Knobloch did a great job. And Boswell was the guy who ended up one-handedly. I thought that might happen given the size of Bryant Boswell. So he's the guy that took care of Hanley, and Rutgers moves on. And then the Princeton-Yale game. So I actually watched, I didn't know the result of Rutgers-Penn. I actually went to a high school game, Catonsville versus Severna Park. A number of the boys that I coached on the Rough Riders 2022 team were playing for the Catonsville squad against Severna Park. So I went and watched that. So I came home, I watched the fourth quarter. And, because it was 6-6 going into the fourth, and that was great lacrosse. And then I watched Princeton Yale. I could never get into a groove with Princeton Yale. And I don't know what it was. First, I got to say, those Princeton helmets are god awful. They are god awful. And Rutgers and Princeton wearing all black in 100 plus degree weather on that turf, it reminded me of the 92 semis at Franklin Field when Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, my beloved Blue Jays, when I was a member of that team, came out in all black and we lost to Syracuse 21-16. And I can still remember Coach Seaman, Tony Seaman, getting grief for wearing the all black. And that day was 110, 115 degrees on the turf. That's not the reason we lost. I remember in typical Coach Seaman fashion, he said that he had Hopkins scientists evaluate the fabric before. And he was so full of it.
No. I'm sure people believe that.
Oh, they did. Absolutely. You kidding me? I mean, the man's always been quick on his feet.
Yeah, an Hopkins scientist.
Yeah. I had Hopkins scientists review this material, and they said there was no cooling or heating issues whatsoever. So that was funny. But it wasn't funny losing that game. But yeah, all black, man. But those Princeton helmets, oh my God. Come on. I know you said you liked them. There's no way.
I like the winged helmet. I'm a Delaware Blue Hand fan. Grew
up. But the way that winged helmet looks compared to that's awful.
I'm okay with it. It's a lot of history and tradition there.
Well, fashion aside, this is a good Princeton team, and I was really impressed with Peters, the offense. Yale, man, they made a lot of mistakes. Yale made a lot of mistakes in that game.
It kind of is like that BU Princeton game. Like, does Princeton, when they play like this, I mean, forget about the last like 3 or 4 weeks of the season, the regular season, but when they play like this, when they're healthy and rested, like, do they just make teams make mistakes?
That's a good point. Do they make you look inadequate?
I mean, their first seven goals were by seven different goal scorers.
Right.
You know, they have dudes. I mean, I've said it I saw them the first couple of weeks of the season when they played Maryland and Georgetown. I saw them play in person, and I was blown away at the size, the athleticism, how physical some of them can be, some of the guys can be. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good lacrosse team. And, hats off to the Tigers for making it back to the national semifinals. What was that statistic? Was it the first time since
2004? So 18 years.
2004. Yeah.
It's been, I think, 9 years for Cornell. And really, I mean, I want to touch on this is Rutgers and how excited and impressive they are. You know, you cover the Big Ten. We talk a lot about the Big Ten teams on this podcast the last several years. I've just included Rutgers as one of just the better national teams, and they deserved it. But when I'm reading like their game notes this week and just how historic this is for them.
Yeah.
You know, this is their first Final Four. They set a program record for wins in a season this year. They have 15 right now.
When they hit 13, that gave them the record.
No, the record was 11.
Oh, wow. So it was 11. Okay, gotcha.
They had the most ranked win, you know, wins over ranked teams, 6. Listen to this. This is hard to believe, but like, because, I don't know. I found this hard to believe, but their win over number 3 Penn was tied for the highest ranked win in program history.
I believe
ever. I mean, then they were upset like a number 1 team. Just a lot of that stuff. They were 2-9 in NCAA games prior to last year, and now they've won 3. They've won, you know, made it to the quarterfinals each of the past few years. They're 3-1 in the last 2 years. It's just amazing, and it's their first Rutgers. Any men's program to make the Final Four since 1994 men's soccer team that I think had who's the redheaded guy who?
Oh, Alexi Lalas.
I think he was on that team. I think he was part of that, or like he was of that generation of Rutgers of soccer players. So it's a historic thing for them. And I'm excited for them. I'm excited for their fan base. I'm excited for Coach Breck, the program. They're 27 seniors. It's a big deal. And that excitement, you know, it sometimes gets lost on, Maryland. They've been there 9 times in the last 11 years, but it's something to be celebrated. In basketball, there's a lot of basketball coaches, and I know their tournament's different. It has more teams in it, and it's set up in a regional format where you have to win 4 games to get to the Final Four. But in basketball, there's a lot of coaches who say, like, you're a champion when you get to the Final Four. It's like you've accomplished the thing everybody wants to do. Of course, you want to win it. But winning that regional championship, you actually cut the nets down. And then, before you go to the Final Four, win your regional championship, you get to cut the nets down. So congratulations to all 4 of these teams on really an incredible season. This making it to the Final Four is sort of the benchmark of success for sure for every program in the country. And I'm excited for this weekend.
So to hit on Rutgers, again, I've covered them now for the last 7 years as part of the Big Ten Network, and I've just watched them grow each and every year. And when you think about the history and tradition of Rutgers, first of all, it's not a place of champions. Like, Rutgers is not, they haven't had a ton of success, not just in men's lacrosse, but other sports, winning championships. But when you look at the men's lacrosse history, I mean, you talk about, like, Al Ray was a first-team All-American middy back in the late 70s, early 80s. Greg Rinaldi, I played against Reed Jackson. He was the Schmeisser winner back in 94. Keith Cromwell is another incredible player that's come out of Rutgers. John Neslonsky, the goaltender, his daughter, Titi, is on the Rutgers women's team, who had a historic season in 2022. Jules Hedenberg, Scott Beda, of more recent vintage, Kieran Mullins. Like, these are, so I guess what I'm saying is those last cluster of players I mentioned have played within the last 3 years. The other ones is over a span of 40 years. So Coach Breck's getting players. He's getting guys. And year in and year out, they're a team to contend with. So hats off to the Scarlet Knights. I think a lot of people are forecasting low attendance this weekend. We know Maryland fans will travel. Rutgers is going to bring it. The Jersey contingent will bring it. They brought it to Yersac. They brought it to Shewart last weekend. I think they're going to show up in droves at Rentschler on Saturday.
I think the Cornell fan base will travel as well. They usually have a good following. All right, well, let's start there.
Okay.
Let's start with Saturday's first game at Rentschler Field. Number 6 seed Rutgers, 15-3 on the season, will take on number 7 seed Cornell. It's 13-4 on the season. And this sets up to be a really thrilling game.
A lot of people felt like this could have been a quarterfinal matchup. People had forecasted like a 6-7 for Rutgers and Cornell. The Big Red, they're just methodical. It's death by a thousand paper cuts when you play the Big Red. We saw them fall behind early to Ohio State and then went on a run and just won that game going away. This past weekend against Delaware, I thought they were very opportunistic going into that fourth quarter, 7-7. Delaware, self-inflicted wounds, a couple of unnecessary roughness penalties, late hits. I think they even have an unsportsmanlike conduct. Cornell just kept their heads, and then they made Delaware pay. I mean, the Michael Long goal with just over 10 minutes left in the game, man up. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to cash in on your opponent's mistakes. They did that. I thought Chase Erland was really good between the pipes. This is going to be a good game, and when you talk about Rutgers, you can just see this team swelling with confidence, and Colin Kirst has been lights out. I think the defense is playing much better than they were in the regular season. Offensively, they've got a couple guys back. Dante Colas scored a gigantic goal in the fourth quarter for them. He's a guy who had been injured, and now he's back in the mix a little bit to add to Knobloch and Gallagher and Bartolo, Jacoby, so this is a, much like, not as much as the Penn Rutgers game, because Penn does have some older guys. Again, this is a situation where you have, a really old veteran team going against guys that are, younger, in the Cornell Big Red. Both of them, you know, Rutgers has never been here, you know, Cornell since 09. So nobody has a taste of this big stage, but I think those quarterfinal matchups, I think Rutgers might be better prepared with the atmosphere because of Hofstra was a much better atmosphere, I think, to get ready for a stage like this than Columbus was. So maybe the advantage goes to Rutgers that way.
What do you think are some of the inside the game matchups to watch out for?
Adler, who's Gavin Adler going to take? You know, is he going to take, it probably takes Ross Scott. I don't know if he's played against a player as quick as Ross Scott. So I think that's a gigantic matchup. And I mean, you know, maybe this is where you're going with it. The big groove fastball that I just whiffed on, CJ Kirst against Colin Kirst, brother against brother in a lacrosse fashion. So that's going to be incredibly intriguing. And, you know, how does Rutgers defense match up? We saw Boswell take Hanley last week for a good stretch, a close defender out front. You know, Gene Felix and Russo are 1A, 1B. Ethan Rawls, absolutely terrific at the pole. And then you have, you know, then you got Boswell now, who's a known entity and a proven, you know, commodity down there as well. You know, Piatelli, excellent goal scorer. Kirst, terrific goal scorer. Interested in those matchups.
And that game will be at 12 noon on Saturday. You can watch that on ESPN2 if you don't go to the game, but I suggest you make the trip.
And Westwood One Radio too, buddy.
Absolutely. If you're late and you're driving in your car, pick it up on Westwood One.
Or if you're out back grilling, throw the radio on. Or if you're Dan Flynn, go out with the roller skates, the short shorts, the high socks, the tank top or sans tank top, the big headphones, and be grooving around the lakefront, Columbia, listening to the cool sounds of Dave Ryan and Mark Dixon on Westwood One.
Got the rollerblades. Get the rollerblades. In the second game of the day, at approximately 2:30, these games never start. I don't know why they put 2:30. Tony Seaman used to say a cross game takes 2 hours and 12 minutes to play. That was what he always used to say. So then the teams have to have 40 minutes of warm up or something like that. They never start at 2:30. I don't even know why they do that. So around 2:30.
It's a goal.
Probably like 2:45 or so. They won't start before 2:30. I promise you that. Maryland, who is undefeated, will take on the Princeton Tigers, who are 11-4 on the season. And these teams met early in the season. Maryland won in College Park 15-10. But obviously, both these teams have gotten better, learned a lot about themselves over the year. And I don't know. If I was a betting man, Dix, I don't know if anyone's going to beat Maryland. I don't know if anyone can beat them.
This is
but this would be a good game.
Who won the Kentucky Derby? What was the name of that horse?
This was Long Shot. Was the name of the horse that won.
80-1. That's what Princeton is in this game. But take that action. Why not? I mean, take that. And they're not, I don't know if they're figure, you know, literally 80-1 long shots, but you know what I'm getting at. Okay. Princeton, looking at the first game against University of Maryland, 15-10 win for the Terps. Princeton was what, third faceoff guy they were using?
Yeah. So there was a COVID outbreak. So both their top faceoff guys, Toby Ginder and Kyler Sandoval, were out. Ginder was injured. Sandoval had COVID, I believe, but so did their third faceoff man who played, Jack Henry Vera. Vera played. He won 9 of 29. So Maryland dominated, won 20 of 29 faceoffs that day. But he didn't clear protocols to travel with the team on Friday. He drove down the morning of the game after he cleared protocol and jumped in there and played. Princeton was preparing to play with who knows who facing off. So I think that could be a distinct change in this game and somewhere where Princeton might be able to make up some ground from their last outing. In that game where Maryland won 20-29 faceoffs, they won 10 of 12 in the second half. So not only did he had been sick, he wore down a little bit, and they really took advantage of him in the second half. So again, I think that's a place where they can make up some ground. In that game, the Terps really had trouble stopping Sam English in the first half. He had 4 goals in the first half for Princeton in that Maryland game. We saw a little bit of it against Yale. He has the ability to get inside the defense He scored three goals against Yale, but he missed a couple on the doorstep that were nice saves by Paquette. So I think he's a difference maker in any game that he plays. And Colton McAsee wasn't playing a lot for Princeton at that point in the season either. He's become, you know, the third starting attackman. So again, that's the Princeton side of it. Maryland just rolls though, right? They're just,
It'll be interesting to see. George Bond has been playing like an animal the last month of the season. Will he get Wisnowskis? That could be, when you talk about Maryland, it's not really about matchups because that offense just flows so seamlessly, so positionless. They've been a juggernaut. They've been an absolute juggernaut. But, you know, welcome back to the party, Princeton. I remember that 04 team. They lost to Navy in the national semifinals, and the midshipmen went on to that national championship game. Great game against Syracuse. But Princeton had upset Maryland that year in 04 at Scott Stadium, I believe, at the University of Virginia. Really no upsets this year for Princeton. You know, they manhandled BU. They throttled Yale. You know, now they get the big boy on the block. And listen, you know, a lot of people are calling this a coronation versus a tournament for the University of Maryland. So if Maryland wins this weekend, they enter the discussion of greatest team of all time. And I think that's fair. When you start looking at other great teams, I tweeted something out earlier this week, the 91 Carolina team is somebody that's always seems to kind of fall between the cracks. But I played against that team. And when you look at them, 16-0, they outscored opponents 253-115. So that's like a 16-7 average margin of victory. They had a ton of All-Americans on that team. They were just so deep. They just came at you. And I know, like, Coach Seaman should listen to this podcast. It's the third time we're going to mention him. He would say, like, you know, whoever the small guys like Ryan Wade, they don't get as much playing time because, you know, whoever can corral the box and get next to the box is going to go in the game. They just throw guys in. But that was a very special team. A lot of people point to 1990 Syracuse, and I'm not saying that they're not a great team, but that was like a transition year in college lacrosse, maybe very similar to what we're seeing here in 2022. And what I mean by that is Yale and Loyola were both first-time national semifinalists that year. Carolina was a year away. They ran the table then in 91. Hopkins had graduated a great class. Dave Petromala, chief amongst that 89 group for Johns Hopkins. Virginia was down. Maryland wasn't that good that year. And Syracuse just destroyed everybody, not taking anything away. They had the Gate brothers. But maybe, you know, look, potentially maybe if any other team had the Gate brothers, they could have won the national championship that year. Who knows? But they were loaded with All-Americans as well. And then you look at 06 Virginia, another ridiculous team. Fantastic team, but remember, no Duke that year. The Blue Devils had their season suspended. And remember, in that tournament, they beat UMass in the national championship game, another first-timer to championship weekend, who beat an undefeated Hofstra team in the quarterfinals. That was the favorite to get to the national semifinals. So again, and that was a Syracuse team in 06 that made it, that wasn't that good. Compared to its predecessors. And then Maryland was upset by UMass. So I don't know, man. And then you got, hey, I'll make you smile. Then the 05 Hopkins team, 16-0. That's a team that's rarely mentioned as greatest of all time, probably because they needed overtime to beat Navy. And that was a weird game at the end where they got a couple calls to go their way. And then Kyle Harrison scored the game-winning overtime goal. The Virginia, who can forget that epic Virginia national semifinal with Pizer to burn with, what, 1 or 2 seconds left in the game. But, you know, that 05 Hopkins team is one that I think could be mentioned among the greats.
Do you need to be undefeated to be in this list?
I don't think so. I think 2012 Loyola has a case.
I was thinking of the 1985 Hopkins Blue Jays
team. Sure.
Loaded. That was Larry Quinn. Well, Dressel,
again, and I should have prefaced by saying I'm looking at the last like 20 years. No, 20, 30 years. But no, 84, 85 Hopkins teams, man, love those guys.
79, 80, 81 Hopkins team has won three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're fighting history. So who's the pressure on this week? I feel like
it's all on Maryland. Yeah, it's all on Maryland.
For real. Come on. And Maryland, again, that's why it's wishful thinking. But I feel like Princeton might have a bit of a chance. Like Maryland is going there to win two games. Princeton's going there to win one. They feel like if they can win on Saturday, they'll take their chances on Monday. And I think, it's just a different mental aspect when you go there. Now, again, the way Maryland has handled their business this season, just destroying teams and playing a full 60 minutes, I'm not saying that they're going to not be prepared for this game or be looking ahead to Monday. I'm just saying it's a mindset, and Princeton can put all the cards on the table on Saturday and be happy with the results, where Maryland is definitely, they've been there. These guys have all done it. Most of these guys played in the national championship game last year. They know, they're going there for the weekend, and it's a mindset. Who has the best chance of these three teams that are in the Final Four to beat Maryland?
I'd like to say Rutgers, but Rutgers beat Maryland once in the history of their program. That was back in 1980, and that's the only dragon that they haven't been able to slay in the Big Ten landscape. If a team's going to beat them, it'll probably be a team from Jersey. That's what I'm thinking. And then watch, Cornell's going to win the national championship now. Look, this would be a major, an upset for the ages if Princeton can beat Maryland on Saturday. And then I think also if they lose the national championship game on Monday, same thing. But look, the semifinal round, I feel, are where teams stub their toe. Think of 95 Hopkins, undefeated, lost to Maryland. What was that, 2008? Duke had beaten Hopkins in the regular season, 19-20-7? And the Blue Jays went up to, I think it was in Gillette that year, and beat Duke.
And then Hopkins lost to Syracuse in the championship game.
So it can happen. And yeah. I think it more times than not, the major upset happens in the semifinals versus the national championship game.
I agree. Well, it's all going to be on the line on Saturday. Games are at noon and 2:30. And I know you'll be there. I hope to be there too. We'll see what happens.
Get that. Come through with that sweep, my man.
Yeah. We'll see. I made a call. You know who I called. And he said there's a chance of it. But I can get in anywhere. I'm not worried about me. It's my children with me and Amy, whether people are going to let us in. All right, Dix. It's time for a give and go. And I'm pretty hungry right now. So I was thinking about some appetizers. Think of what are your go-to appetizers? I have a few things that I'll eat just about any time. Like if someone offers me a hot dog or popcorn, I can't refuse that. And then part of it, some of these are appetizers. So here's my like top three. And I don't mean like, yes, I love scallops wrapped in bacon. but you don't usually see those on a menu per se. You know, that's sort of like a hors d'oeuvre.
That's something for a wedding.
Yeah, you know, past hors d'oeuvre or something.
Formal event.
A stuffed mushroom or something. But this is, I'm talking about stuff you can get pretty at most places. So I'm going to say number one is wings. Like my number three, I should say. My first one is wings. I love buffalo wings. And that's one of those things I'll eat pretty much anywhere, anytime. I like regular buffalo wings, but I'll try like the exotic, I'll do Old Bay. I'll do, lemon pepper or something.
Old Bay is exotic to you. You got to
get the house seasoning, some type of Asian sauce. That doesn't bother me. I can do that. But prefer buffalo. I'm old school. Number two, crab dip. I'll get crab dip anytime I can get crab dip. And I don't need it in a bread bowl or anything like that. I just want crab dip in a little bowl, a little bit of cheese on it. I don't need the cheese layer. Give me a nice piece of French or Italian bread to dip my crab dip in, and I'm a happy guy. And then my third thing, and really my top one that I will get anywhere, it's another one of those things, popcorn, hot dogs, and wings, I'll eat anywhere, it's calamari. I feel like I am a connoisseur of calamari, and that is my go-to. It's on a lot of different menus, not just Italian restaurants, but I love calamari, and I'll get it just about anywhere. What do you go for?
Nachos. Love nachos, especially if they're cooked properly and have good distribution of cheese. you know, I love pickled jalapenos, so throw those on there with some chicken and obviously the guac and sour cream.
You don't need to eat a meal after that. That's full.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's why you got to be with a group when you get the nachos. Well,
yeah. I bet when you take your sons to a place, well, they can devour some nachos.
The biggest, one of the things I'm most proud of with both my boys is when we do have nachos, they know never to be the guy to grab that one nacho that has the cheese that will pull, like, ruin the entire dish. So I'm very proud of that. We had that a couple weeks ago. We were out and Owen went for a chip. I'm like, oh, why don't you grab them? He goes, I don't want to be that guy. And sure enough, that was one we had to kind of break apart and, you know, get to business with. Chips and salsa. Love chips and salsa as well. I'm a chip guy. I like chips. So nachos, chips and salsa. I hate calamari. It doesn't agree with me for whatever reason. I shouldn't say I hate it. I like it, but I don't like it, you know, 2 hours after I ate it. And then crab dip, unfortunately, I am allergic to crab. Anytime you can get, and here's another one. Like, it's not just, like, ahi tuna nachos are terrific. I'll give a shout out to a new restaurant up on Frederick Road in Catonsville, the Atlantic Food and Spirits. They took the old place of Dimitri's. Mm-hmm. Remember the old Dimitri's up there? They have incredible ahi tuna nachos. Also, I love pretzels, like soft pretzels that you dip in like beer cheese and, you know, mustard. And I can, you know, I like that kind of stuff. Also love wings. Do you like buffalo wings or you like boneless wings?
I like the bone in.
Bone in. Yeah. I could do both, but the bone in are better because typically when you get the boneless, they got too much batter on them, you know, too much, you know, crud on them.
You're right. And you're eating mostly like hardened battery crud.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, my kids' age, there's a lot of chicken nuggets and chicken tenders that come by like my table. So when I can get it, like no breading and like real wings,
it's going to grill, go for that. Grilled chicken tenders. Another one that I really like, I do like hummus. Hummus and nice warm pita bread or vegetables. I like spinach and artichoke dip. It's good. And charcuterie board. I'm a fan of a good charcuterie board.
Oh, who doesn't love a good charcuterie board? Love it. It's my favorite. This is a good discussion, Dix. All right. Well, I'm hungry now.
Go get something to eat.
If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. I think we have like one more episode we're going to do. We'll do like a wrap up. I don't even know if it'll be next week. I might wait a week or so.
And well, don't wait too long because you're infamous for that. You'll say we're going to do a wrap up show, and then all of a sudden,
I always get excited.
Like, hey, we haven't done the wrap up show yet.
I want to do like a where like I pull in clips and, you know, like
you've been saying that for like 4 years now, and I've yet to see it happen. Like, it's not going to happen again. I think the most we're going to be able to accomplish is get Christian Sweezy back one more time. Maybe. That's probably that. You know, I'm going to, you know, manage expectations here, folks. Under promise and over deliver.
No, we're gonna have like the D Flies and Dixies or something. It'll be awards, and they'll be like best sound effects or best coach restaurant suggestion. Oh man! All right. Well, we always love to hear from you, so let us know what you want to hear from us. Give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm simply at D_FLY. And you got tickets to the game. Or especially sweet. Let me know. Hit me up. I'm a good guest. I'm gracious, kind, and know a little bit about lacrosse too.
Just make sure you have buffalo wings, crab dip, and calamari.
Yeah, and hot dogs or popcorn. I'll take
hot dogs and popcorn. Yeah. Great.
And remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.
All right.